Let's do it. Welcome to the Lighter Side of the Dark Side. It's your weekly freak show coronavirus version tonight because we're not in the same studio, but and Hannah, unfortunately, we were trying to get her on the show, but that didn't quite work. But because one of her favorite actors and one of my favorite actors is right there, Daniel Roebuck.
Really? Well.
Well, you have to say, I have to tell you, my co-host Hannah is a big horror movie fan, big Rob Zombie horror movie fan.
Oh, yeah.
You popped up in so many of his movies.
He's such a good guy.
Yeah, I definitely want to hear about that. Yeah.
And I know people want to know he's like, but he's just a nice man and a very, very talented director.
Yeah, that's I noticed that. And I just rewatched River's Edge again, one of my favorite movies because I have a dark side. And anyway, before we get going, I wanted to say, people listening, we're both artists. Support Daniel however you can.
Oh, that's sweet.
Support me however you can. And here's how you can. You can go to audibletrial.com/DMS. You're always on set. You're always out. You probably listen to a lot of audiobooks.
Thank you for saying that. I will now that I know that they're your sponsor.
Yes.
And so we should all listen to audiobooks. Yes. I've been fighting the eyes lately. So I like to read, I like to hold, but I'm getting over it because I can't see the book. So thank God for audio.
Well, the thing about that is if you're on a long drive and you're trying to pass the time, it's great. Put on an audiobook. Actually, you were in Lords of Salem, and I know they have the audiobook of Lords of Salem that goes into the story in more detail.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That's they did novelization. I think Rob Zombie did it himself, or collaborated with another writer. And there's a lot of stuff in there that goes into the backstory. That's my favorite zombie film. I think that's the best.
Oh, that's interesting. In the novelization, Dark Mark.
Yes.
Am I in it? Because
No, I have to listen to it. I will
cut
order
me
that.
Out of the movie, so I don't know if I'm in the audiobook. But I love him.
Yes. Or whatever you want. They've got everything from Shakespeare to Smut.
And yeah, well, I know, but that's true. I wouldn't listen to Smut. I would listen to Shakespeare. I'm hoping to live long enough to do, the problem is when you're just old enough to do King Lear, you're just old enough to not remember any of the lines. So I should start learning it now.
Yeah. And then I can see you doing King Lear.
Ah, thank you.
Have you done Shakespeare?
No.
No. Okay. Anyway, go to audibletrial.com.
Like, there's so much stuff I haven't done. So, yes. But it doesn't scare me. Like, I'm an actor. I can figure out how to do Shakespeare. If I could figure out how to do, Star Wars, I can figure out how to do Shakespeare.
We're going to go throughout your career because you've
I like that too. Let's see if we get letters from that. Star Wars, Shakespeare, what's the difference? Let's see if people are offended.
From Shakespeare fans or from Star Wars fans?
Both.
Okay. Yeah.
Star Wars fans, how dare you?
You never know. You never know.
Anyway, people should go to Audible, and there's a way to
audibletrial.com/DMS. One free book, two free Audible originals. And the Audible originals range from Kate McKinnon does a play. They did William Gibson wrote a script for Alien 3. They acted that out with Lance Henriksen, Michael Biehn, and other great actors. Yeah, all sorts of crazy stuff there. Oh. So John Lithgow has a one-man play. Billy Crystal wrote a play. Kevin Kline's in it. And Annette Bening. All sorts of stuff in there.
That's so great. Interesting. Cool.
And we also are sponsored by Hustler Hollywood and Spy Associates. So if you're watching this on YouTube or listening to this on any podcast site you're listening to, we will have links for both those sites. So you get 20% off Hustler Hollywood and 20% off any order over $249 at Spy Associates. So if anybody's spying on you or you're spying on anyone else, there you go.
Well, this is good to know. If any of the people from A Channel of Peace are listening to this, let's keep this secret to ourselves.
Yes, that's why I just wanted to go real quick.
Thank you.
So, Daniel Roebuck.
I joke.
I'm sorry?
I joke. I mean, they're sponsoring you. How God bless them that they're, supporting you. That's
great. Yes. I mean, you need basic necessities these days. Reading is one.
Reading. Gotcha.
Lingerie is another.
Sure.
Sure. You never know what's going to happen, so you want to make sure nobody's watching you or you're not watching anybody else.
This is how I – this is – let me – Dark Mark, I just happen to have laundry close by. This is how I buy lingerie. I go, nice, nice.
It's hot.
And then I go like this.
Very nice.
Yeah, that'll be fine.
Well, Daniel Roebuck has been in everything. I had – I'm sure you're familiar, although I don't think you've worked together, but I had – another great character actor, John Hawkes, on the show a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I've never worked with him, but I admire him very much.
He has like 150 IMDb credits, but you guys started about the same time.
Well, I don't have any other than, you know, poor John has to be a movie star sometimes. See, there's something to be said for being a guy like me who, like, I don't have to star in a movie. I could go do a movie. I could do a day on a movie. I don't care. I'm an actor. I'll do right. Whatever
actually, when you Google Daniel Roebuck, what comes up is not actor, but character actor.
Oh, really?
I don't know if you saw that.
No, I never did. You'd be surprised that I don't Google myself as much as other actors. But that's interesting. I did not know that. But
yes, it comes up character actor, which you are.
Dark Mark, it's weird. You know, when I was a kid, remember we had those books? Oh, what a character! What a character! And it was about character actors. So how strange that I would read those books and then I'd be this thing. But that's like, as we talk about this, everything in my life goes full circle. So it doesn't surprise me that that's how I'm referred to. And I'm honestly proud of that. I'm proud of it.
Well, I was going to say, he's been 150 movies and TV shows. You've been over 250.
Yeah, I don't like to brag. But do you know what's funny about IMDb? It is, you know, when I was a kid, so Dark Mark, you know who John Carradine is, right?
Of course.
Sure.
Of course,
sure.
The big horror movie star, in the, you know, from the 40s to the 80s.
Yeah, a huge star for 50 years. He was actually in Bride of Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. He's one of the guys who, he just is there probably for a day or two. But he's been from Bride of Frankenstein through The Howling and a few movies after that. And I had an opportunity to he toured with this Roy Raden Vaudeville Review. And Dark Mark, that would interest you because there's actually a book called The Cotton Club Murders, I think is what the book's about, called. And it's about the murder of this poor guy, Roy Raden, who used to do these variety vaudeville shows that would tour around the country. Like they would play in our local high school and you'd see him. But I saw Milton Berle live, Georgie Jessel live, Jackie Vernon live.
Really?
All these guys as a kid. And one of the last years, would you believe John Carradine was part of the Roy Raden Vaudeville Review? And it said then that he had been in 500 movies and television shows. And I thought, that's impossible. But, you know, they only list on IMDb one, like Matlock is one, but there were 60. Lost is one, and there was whatever, nine
the
or 12,
whole season, yeah.
Right. I did a show for the Catholic Channel in New York called Classic, in which we watched old movies and television shows and discussed them from a faith point of view. And there were 188 of those. So, like, I realize I'm well over 500.
Right.
If you count everything as one. Not that it matters. Why would it matter?
You have outdone John Carradine.
Yeah, I don't think I'll ever outdo John Carradine, but I've, you know. As a child, I thought 500 impossible, and now I'm only 57. So I think, how many more can I do?
Well, you know, John Carradine's last movie, if I recall correctly, was some bikini, very low budget kind of trauma movie. So,
oh, it was well.
Something to look forward to.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, you got to work.
Yeah.
I mean, we're actors. That's our, you know, it's not. It's the gift we were given. So John Carradine, look. I direct plays too. You know, I direct a lot of stuff. I do a lot of stuff.
You write plays as well.
Write plays. And we had an actor named Bernie Bima, who I met 36 years ago when we did No Time for Sergeants. I did No Time for Sergeants, maybe 35 years ago. But then I would use him. I knew him from then and I would put him in other plays. And that guy walked on stage on his 94th birthday. I think it was. That's how many he got to before, you know, he went to his glory with God. But you know, he opened a play, I think it was his 94th birthday, and I said, there's got to be a place in heaven for a guy who can
I would think so, yeah.
Walk on stage on his 94th birthday. He couldn't remember any lines, but so we removed that particular detail from his performance. But he was there, and his heart was there, and his, you know, his body was there. It's just his memory wasn't as clear.
That's great. Did you let him improvise? Is that what happened?
No, we just gave him a part where he didn't really have to say anything.
Okay.
But he was still there.
Well, let's go back. You grew up in Pennsylvania, right?
I did. Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
Greatest town on earth.
And what does this mean to you?
Oh, what is that? That's is that a clown?
That is a clown.
Well, I was in a circus when I was young, but is that, did I?
That's where
that
I'm going with this.
Oh, that's where you're going. Oh, my God.
You were
God,
the world's youngest clown for a while.
I think so. Well, I may not be able to claim I was one of the youngest. I probably was. At 12, I entered the circus. I was in the circus from 12 to 13. And that was on weekends, believe it or not. It was a weekend circus. So for two seasons in the fall, early winter, I would go out with the circus. It's crazy. And even crazier, Dark Mark, is I was a vampire clown. So
tell me about that.
Yeah, I was obsessed with horror movies. And by the time I was 12, you should know that was like being a clown was my third career. I'd already been a ventriloquist and an impressionist.
I know that.
The clown. You didn't, or you did?
I didn't know you were an impressionist and a ventriloquist.
Yeah? Oh yeah. I wasn't a professional ventriloquist. I was more like the weird kid who carried his ventriloquist all around to annoy his parents. I was mostly that. And as an impressionist, though, I did win a number of awards for the Catholic Youth Organization. So I was I must have been a very famous impressionist in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. I actually got my first job as a performer paid. Was as an impressionist, and then they paid me. Somebody saw me in this talent show, and then they wrote a letter. I still have the letter where they said, "Would you like to do an event and do your routine?" And they said, "And the payment is $10." And dude, you know, I went home like literally like this. Hey, Dad, $10 for 10 minutes. $10 for 10 minutes. How much do you make?
Ooh,
I can tell you. There's no good answer to that. I might still be, honestly, I haven't checked. I might still be grounded. He said for life, I kind of snuck away for a little while and came to Hollywood, but I think he still might think I'm upstairs in the bedroom at my house. Right. Yeah.
How old were you when you were rubbing money in your father's face?
Probably 11.
11? Okay. Yeah.
But bad, you know, bad.
You're still $10 for 10 minutes. That's better than half the shows out here in LA when they had stages.
Dude, I wish I could make that now, you know? Give me $10 for 10 minutes.
You make SAG scale. That's 20 bucks.
20 bucks. Well, it's funny. SAG now, you could work for $120 a day as a SAG actor, which is less than I pay the nice lady who cleans my house.
Right.
So I do think that, you know, it's weird for actors. Although, you know, isn't it funny? I had to use that contract when I made my own movie, and that's what I paid myself. So
right.
Obviously I will work for it if I like the director.
Yes. And there's a few, will you work for that for Rob Zombie? $120?
If I said that now, I guarantee you I'd be working for it for $120.
Oh, okay.
No, Rob is more generous than that.
Yes.
But it doesn't matter. I'd work for Rob Zombie for free. Unfortunately, he knows that.
So you went to Hollywood. How old were you when you went to Hollywood?
20. I came at 20 years old.
And you got a leading part right off the bat.
I did. I did Cave Girl.
Cave Girl, which I saw the other night. It's on YouTube. Oh, stop it, stop it, stop it. Here's the story behind Cave Girl that, as I know it. It's a movie I've always seen the post. I've always seen the video box.
Yeah.
Always intrigued.
Yeah.
There was like a whole in the early 80s, like there's some sort of caveman fetish because Ringo Starr had a movie.
Yeah, yeah. And then there
Quest
was the
for
big,
Fire. They had like a bunch of
yeah,
movies.
Quest for Fire, and there was Clan of the Cave Bear. I mean, everybody was intrigued. It'd be interesting, isn't it? It would be interesting to go back, Dark Mark, and figure out what the heck everybody was so obsessed with then.
Well, In the case of the Cave Girl, I could see why. She's pretty cute. But
well, Cave Girl, you know, I like to say about Cave Girl, it was a teenage sex comedy, but there were no teenagers in it. I was already 20.
Right.
There's no sex, and it's not really funny. So a triple threat, to be sure, Dark Mark. Triple threat.
But there was one sex scene, but...
Well, it wasn't... I mean, she took down her top, and I kissed her.
Yeah.
And I cut. You know, I didn't even have the ability. I had more contact in a naughty way with Cynthia Rulo when she put my head in her boobs.
Right.
I mean, you know, none of it was terrible, but...
What I heard was that you auditioned for another role.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Tell the story. You auditioned for another role.
And I auditioned for a smaller... Yeah. We all were in a big room. Like, you know... I'd only come from community theater. So we were all in a big room like community theater and everybody's sitting around and, you know, I was reading for my little part and he was mixing and matching. And I watched one actor after another read to be Rex, the lead.
Yeah.
And honestly, Dark Mark, I'm trying not, it's important to not think too much of yourself, but as an actor, you do have to have some hubris. And I watched and I thought, God, these guys are not funny. And the whole idea was it was going to be like, oh, and then...
It's a nerdy part.
Yeah, it's a nerdy part. So I watched it all, and this is a true story. The director says, you know, is everybody... The director says, okay, thank you. We're done. And, you know, people are like, they're getting their books, and they're getting ready to go, and they're getting their drink. And he says, did everybody read everything they wanted to read for? And... you know, I'm like, yes, what? Oh, my hand's up. Oh, yeah. Could I read for the lead? And he was like, oh, okay. And then, you know what? Everybody was like, oh, they all had to put their stuff down. Now I'm an idiot and I'm asking. So I read, he had me read three different scenes. And then, I mean, it was really quite extraordinary. When everybody then was done, like when I was done reading, it was like, he didn't ask the question again because he didn't want any other idiot to have to read. And I went up to him and I said, his name is David Oliver. And it's important that we say his name because he's a great guy.
Yeah.
Great guy. And I said, David, I will do anything to be in this movie. Like, you know, I'll play a caveman. I'll be whatever. It doesn't matter. And he said, no, there's a part of, I got to just figure this out, which meant that he realized his dilemma, I'm sure, was that, you know, it's called Cave Girl, but the whole movie is seen. You're with this guy the whole movie. So they ended up, I guess he gave up his choice for the Cave Girl and then took me on to take me on. I invite people to watch. I think we have it up on Vimeo. If they search Daniel Roebuck, Cave Girl, A Second Journey Back in Time. I don't know if you could put that in your notes.
Oh, really? Right?
Cave Girl, Second Journey Back in Time, you'll actually see they were putting it out again. It's been out many times. Mm-hmm. And when they were putting it out, I said, are you guys doing a making of? And they said, no. And I said, what if I do a making of? Okay. So I actually, I invite people to watch it. I don't want to tell it because there's some really fun stuff in it. But, you know, it's rare that an actor who's been as blessed as I am goes back to something like that, because normally, you know, the Silver Chalice, you know, Paul Newman's not like, hey, let me talk about the Silver Chalice, you know, he's embarrassed by it. But I'm not embarrassed by Cave Girl, and this is kind of the point, because that guy David Oliver gave me an opportunity that you would only get like through an independent film, right? So he let me star in his movie. He trusted me to star in his movie. And that was an enormous gift. And I make fun of it not being funny. It's just, you know, I just don't know that that was exactly David's gift was comedy. You know what I mean? It's a silly movie. It's kind of edited slow. It doesn't move. If I could recut it, it would be about 17 minutes.
Sure.
But I'm real big on cutting to the comedy.
Yeah. So
anyway, that's the Cave Girl story. Was it worth it?
No, it was worth it. That's a great story that it tells you that if somebody's asking you a question and somebody's giving you an opportunity, take it.
Exactly right, Mark. Exactly right. So, you know, I put this up. This is funny. I have it in this book. But this is a book I'm writing called The Audition is the Job and Other Truths That I've Learned in the Land of Make-Believe. This right. is how much I've already written. It's a big book. But I make that point that we must always, as actors, be gracious. And maybe, I don't know, are you an actor too? You said, do you live in Hollywood?
I live in, yeah, Los Feliz, yeah.
Oh, you do? Oh, great. So I say we must always be gracious, but here was a situation where the guy asked a question. I didn't have the mendacity to say, I want to read for the lead. He right. said, does anybody want to read for anything else? Well, I had an answer. And sometimes you got to be very careful because God is talking to us all the sure. time. All the time. He is always chatting to us. And we will be like, nah. But sometimes it's so specific and you must pay attention. And that day I paid attention.
Right.
And it changed my life because Cave Girl, not a great movie, but a guy saw it, Chuck Williams, who's still one of my dearest friends, he saw it and he was working for a up-and-coming Hollywood manager and he took me into the manager's business and then I got River's Edge, you know, because – so Cave Girl led directly to River's Edge. And, I mean, River's Edge was, you know, a very auspicious place to be as a young
it's
man.
It's an intense movie that still – resonates.
I think so. They showed it. It's been revisited a few times, but we showed it in Hollywood. Maybe last year I took my kids. They had never seen it. My son being just about as old as I was when I shot it. So that was weird. The movie, you know what's great about it, Dark Mark? It looks like it's today.
It hasn't aged like other 80s teen movies have.
Yeah. Like, and I would say even, you know, they showed it with, they showed it with Blue Velvet. Now I don't want any letters, but this is what I'm saying. Blue Velvet is a different kind of movie,
right.
But River's Edge is ageless. Blue Velvet is of the 80s. River's Edge looks like if you went to Tujunga right now, I mean, right now, you'd see kids driving those beater cars dressed exactly the same way.
Listening to Slayer.
Yeah, right? Listen to Slayer. I mean, it's very interesting to me that Tim Hunter is he's a genius, and so is Neil Jimenez, who wrote it, but they reduced the modernness a lot. You only see a few cars.
There's been some online pieces about the movie that say it really invented the grunge look.
It invented
the grunge look. Nirvana, Pearl Jam, all that a few years later.
Yeah, interesting. Well, and that's, I wish I could name the I'm pretty good with crew names. I remember what the designer looked like. She was a lovely lady. I just don't remember her name in this moment, but she was very talented. I remember this about River's Edge. Keanu wouldn't, she confessed to me, let them watch his clothes. So he was.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
They never watched Keanu Reeves' clothes.
In that movie. So I want you to think if he was making out with Ione at the end of the movie, but he's a real actor. I'm not a real actor. You know, I was like,
Take
these clothes and wash them so that I do not stink the next day.
So is that what it was a method thing? Is that he was doing?
I don't know. You know, it's not. I never. That's the great thing about acting is we all have a different path, right? And you would never ask another actor what his method is. Although, interesting story on River's Edge I could share with you. You know the movie. So Dennis has that scene before he pops me. And I'm still there and I'm still watching him. And he's thinking about Ellie and he starts crying, thinking about the other lady and everything.
Right.
It's just a very simple moment. So when he was done, he said like this, he goes, I was thinking about Natalie Wood.
No way.
breaks my heart till to this day, because she had just died. And imagine that they knew each other for 30 years, at least 4 years older than he was when we did River's Edge. How crazy is that?
It's amazing.
Yeah. So, and I don't
look a lot younger.
I don't feel like an old man, but Dennis there, I almost did Dennis. Oh, there's my Dennis. What the, you know, like to do Dennis good, you've got to curse a little. You got to be like, maybe you can bleep this out, but you know, I want you to fuck it. I liked it. Don't put that in there because I don't like people to hear me curse.
It's we'll see what we can do.
It's not perfect. But Dennis was perfect. He was perfect.
And off screen, he wasn't as weird as his.
Oh, no, not at all. He was sober. He was sober. So yeah. He got sober, did, I think this is the order. I think he did Hoosiers, then Blue Velvet, then River's Edge, I think. But they came out in a different order, I think.
Right.
Came out first, then Hoosiers, then River's Edge. But he, you know, he was having his resurgence because, you know, he earned all of that. He was such a great guy. And if you see pictures, there's pictures because I ended up the owner of the key photo book. Didn't have any of the negatives in it, but it it has all of the you know, the sheets, which now you could scan at 1200 DPI, and you know you can.
Right.
So I have all these sheets, and you can see that he and I are smiling a lot while we're shooting, which probably drove poor Dennis or poor Tim Hunter crazy.
And before I move on, and on River's Edge, and I actually do think it's Keanu's best performance. I think he's great in it.
Oh, terrific! No, terrific.
I'm much closer. No, but
I like him in John Wick.
Glover's performance, is it good or is it bad?
Oh, it was good for me. I mean, to me, Mark, it was fantastic to work with him, and it was weird, and you know, I want you to put this in perspective. He was the movie star,
right?
At the time.
Yeah.
What the hell did I know? I was a cave girl. What the hell did I know?
Right.
You know, so we would like, I think, you know, he'd do a scene and we'd be like, and I remember we all knew it was funny when he said, I poked at it with a stick. Cause it took like, it was seven syllables and he made it 17. And that's not easy to do. You know, we all thought that was funny then. The only time I saw the movie with all of us together was 10 years later, maybe in somewhere in the 90s, there was a film festival in Hollywood and they, you know, showed River's Edge. And when the movie opened, I was doing a play. So stupid. I look back at like the stuff I missed because, you know, my sense of propriety. You know, I was directing a play, so I couldn't go to the premiere of River's Edge. Like, what kind of moron am I? But
you're working actor, director, writer.
I don't know. You know, like, I'll be honest, you know, it was a children's play. I don't know what the hell I was thinking. But anyway, you know, I try to serve as I'm called to serve. And that's not a joke. I do think that, you know, I took a commitment and I was following it through. But we saw it together in the 90s, all of us, and Keanu then, by then, was a movie star.
Right.
And we had so much fun. I can only say the only other time I hadn't seen Dudes for years, and they showed it at UCLA in a Penelope Spheres retrospective.
Right.
Were you there?
I wasn't there, but I've seen the movie.
Oh, all right. So John and I hadn't seen it. I hadn't seen it in 20 years. I can't speak for him, but we definitely hadn't seen it together except one time, 25, 30 years ago, probably 30. And we were punching each other. We were crying, you know, cause you know, here's the thing about movies, Dark Mark.
Yeah.
To you, it's a movie. To me, it's my photo album.
Yeah.
You understand? It's my life. It's my friends or my enemies. The
freeze frame of where you were at that time.
Yes, and worse, like if you're a guy like me who goes up and down in weight, you know, imagine if you had to go outside every day with, you know, your photo album and go, look at what I look like when I was 26. you know, which is what, like Matlock's on it. People go, I just watched you today on Matlock.
Right.
And I think they're like, you, what happened to you? But it's like 33 years ago.
I was going to get to Matlock because on your IMDb page, it says you were a fan of Andy Griffith from birth.
From birth.
Which I find hard to believe. But yeah, I'm sure when you were a kid, you watched the show.
He was there in the delivery room. Why don't you believe that? I think he's a good actor. He said, when they slapped me and I cried, he said, good cry. Sorry about that.
But you, when you were a kid, you loved the Andy Griffith show, as we all did.
Yeah. Did you grow up thinking, gosh, why isn't my dad like him?
Yeah.
You know? Why isn't my dad like Andy? My dad was like Herman Munster, you know? Yeah. Still is. I love him, but he's funny. You know, he's all like, Andy Griffith was, I don't want to get all weepy on your Dark Mark show here, but I want you to imagine 3 years with Andy Griffith, what that could be for a guy like me, who's a fan of actors and a fan of what they did on that show is unprecedented. And it lasted 9 years, and it was perfection. Perfection. Right.
But Matlock lasted a long time, too. And you
9 years, too. Andy Griffith had 2 9-year series.
That's amazing.
He could have stayed on the Andy Griffith show for years later, but he didn't, although they did end up canceling all those shows. Remember when CBS in, like, 71, somebody came in and they canceled all. They canceled Green Acres or whatever was on Beverly Hillbillies. Really? They were all making money and they got canceled.
Well, you must have for years, that must have been what most people, when they recognize you. When you go on the street, what do people recognize you for?
Mark, I'll tell you, it is divided by age, by race, and by sex. All of these things are, you know, now people are up in arms about everything. But I'll tell you, I can tell when I'm approached. I can guess generally what it is. And
so
now
a black woman approaches you, what is it?
She's seen Matlock with her mother.
Okay.
A 26-year-old woman looks at me and I say, Quince. She goes, oh my God, I watched Quince 200 times.
Wow.
A 40-year-old dude, lost. A 50-year-old woman of any color, Nash Bridges.
Okay.
Yeah, because all the women like Don Johnson.
Like a 60-year-old guy, probably The Fugitive?
60-year-old guy, absolutely. The Fugitive, absolutely. Or what's weird to me is that, you know what, people love U.S. Marshals. Now, I like both movies. Look, I'm not an idiot. I love both movies. But
I thought it was the only one. I thought U.S. Marshals was better.
See, you do. A lot of people think U.S. Marshals is better. I don't know. I'm like,
They're both good.
Yeah, like one had Harrison Ford, though.
No, but Harrison Ford's great, but I thought the story was a little better in U.S. Marshals.
Oh.
And Robert Downey Jr. and Wesley Snipes were
they were great. How could you have guessed that if you would have said one of these guys is going to prison for 8 years and the other one's going to be the biggest movie star in the world? You may have guessed wrong.
Exactly.
When we were making that movie.
And how's Tommy Lee Jones? Is he as cranky as people say he is or not?
Here's my thinking on Tommy Lee Jones. What must it be like? I don't have this problem, Dark Mark. You might, and I'm not making a joke. But what's it like to be the smartest person in every room you walk in? And that's Tommy Lee Jones. Like, he's...
That's right. He's an Oxford grad.
Oh, but he's like, his brain is... He's way ahead. Like, he's way ahead. Remember that? There's a great line in the Holly Hunter movie with William Hurt, Broadcast News.
Mm-hmm.
And, she keeps pushing for this event to happen in the story. And her boss goes, it must be so terrific knowing you're right all the time.
Oh,
and
right. Yeah, I remember that.
She goes, no, it's awful. And I think of that. I think of Tommy Lee Jones walking into every room and being like, oh, God, these morons.
I knew that.
Yeah, I knew. He knows that. But
you guys have good chemistry. I mean, did you guys get along good?
Oh, gosh, yes. We all did.
Yeah.
I mean, we all did. We all did. That was a really crazy time. The Fugitive. Do you know there's an interesting thing? The first actor died while we were shooting, while they were shooting it. The Richard Jordan was playing the bad guy. Now, I say Richard Jordan. You'll look him up.
Okay.
And you'll be like, oh, that guy. He was in everything in the 70s.
Right, right. I'm familiar, yeah.
To know who he is, yeah.
I do. It took me a second, but yeah.
I think the poor guy had a brain aneurysm after they shot most of the first part of the movie and passed away. That's what I think happened. And it was panic because the whole movie was conceptualized to be shot in a chronological order.
Right.
Not exactly chronological, but his haircut
was
chronological, right? Because it was a huge part of the story is how he looked. So they had to go back, they cast Jeroen Krabbe, and then when we got to the end of the movie, they had to go back and shoot what they had to shoot of the beginning. And sometimes they actually use Richard Jordan's shoulder, I think.
Okay.
Instead of Jeroen, you know, they put him in the same suits. I did that once. I replaced an actor, great actor, that I replaced in a movie. And they used as many of the shots of him that they could use. They put me in a shirt just like his.
Right.
So, you know, when you're over the shoulder and the kids and all you're seeing is a shoulder or an out of focus head, you can get away with it. You would never even know it's another person.
Right. Weird. It's too bad. Now, the other thing, besides River's Edge and so many movies, we don't even have, I could talk to you for 10 hours about your career because you got so many, but
thank you.
You played Jay Leno in The Late Shift.
Oh yeah. That's good.
I just recently watched that.
Oh, that's a good time. Yeah.
You can still do it.
Oh, of course. It's like falling off a bike, you know.
Did you have any reservations playing that? Because I remember hearing an interview with Michael Chiklis. He played Belushi, and he got a lot of backlash. Did that ever cross your mind?
Well, it's hard to, Mark, I don't know. It's the contextually, it was a different thing. Belushi was, nobody wanted that movie made. And by the way, try to find it. Your fans could maybe see it online.
You'd be surprised. It's on Amazon and it's on YouTube.
No, it's not on Amazon.
It is.
To watch?
The Late Shift, yes.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm talking about Wired. No, The Late Shift is...
You can't see that at all.
Yeah, so I'm just going back. The Wired, Chiklis was in trouble, but he wasn't. Who had the last laugh? The guy's had a 40-year career. But, you know, at the time... Bernie Brillstein was still a huge person in Hollywood,
right.
And people feared him. And Aykroyd, nobody wanted that movie made. The Late Shift, the only people who didn't want it made were Warren Littlefield, Helen Kushnick, and David Letterman, I think. And Letterman was such a jerk. I'm sorry. I know people like Letterman. I was so lucky I got to play the nice guy. You know, Letterman.
Because John Michael Higgins, who played Letterman, who was great too.
Great! He's a great actor
who's had a great career too.
Yeah, he's a great actor. And Letterman, you know, humiliated him constantly.
And booked him on the show.
Yeah, he had him on the show, but he didn't really have him on the show. He
bumped him.
Yeah, they bumped him for no, you know. You actually watch that show, it's heartbreaking. Letterman's like, Julia Roberts... Do you have a meatloaf recipe? Like he's just jerking Higgins around.
He's just with the guy.
Yeah. And you know what I think about that? Shame on him. David Letterman set himself up as such a genius. And here he is, you know, sexually harassing his staff and being the most disgusting, gross person. And
right.
And he was beloved. But, you know, he's mad at John Michael Higgins for making a living as an actor. Shame on him. And now
Did you get to meet Jay Leno? Did you get to go on his show?
I've met Jay Leno. I didn't get to go on the show because NBC blacked out The Late Shift. Littlefield would have none of it. Oddly, Lord Littlefield ultimately wasn't the head of NBC and had his own production company. And he tried to put John and I together in a series. I mean, I remember we went and had a meeting and met the network, but they didn't buy it. Anyway, that's Warren Littlefield, Brandon Tartikoff, I got to meet him. God, he was so great. But Jay, now let me tell you about Jay Leno, why he's the classiest man. I played him, true story, I played him And I never contacted him, of course, because I don't want to bother him. Mm-hmm. But I called him. I got home on the last day. I worked very, very early the last day. And I'm not talking about the reshoots, but the last day of principal right. photography. And the very last day, I got home about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And I don't know why I had the gumption to do it. I called, you know, I know the number at Universal because it's the same number forever. And I called Universal and asked for the Tonight Show. They put me the Tonight Show. I asked for Jay Leno, the woman on the line, said, who's calling? And I said, Danny Roebuck. And she said, 1 second. And then Jay's assistant came on and said, Jay, it'll be 1 moment, Daniel. And then he came, hey, Dan, how'd it go? How'd you do? He was so
really
interested. You know, because he knew Betty Thomas, and he knew it was me, and he can't talk publicly about it because he was employed by, because he is a gentleman, was employed by GE and NBC, and
interesting.
But after the show came out, my parents were visiting, and then we went to the taping of the Tonight Show, and he announced me in the audience, and he said, there's my friend Dan Roebuck or something. He goes, you know, he played me in the late shift. He had to wear a fake chin and a cod piece, you know. And I was like,
That's funny.
Yeah. And anytime someone wanted to go, they couldn't have been nicer. And, you know, I actually produced an animated Christmas movie. I was an associate co-producer, rather, of a movie called Christmas is Here Again. And I not only got Kathy Bates to be the villain, I got right. Jay Leno to be the narrator.
That's great.
And so we got to work together like that. He's always been gracious. Always, 100% of the time.
Well, I will tell you, I met Jay Leno once, and when I first got to Hollywood, I was delivering coffee and sandwiches. I was delivering to the Tonight Show, and he actually saw me delivering it. I was across the hall, stopped what he was doing, came over, shook my hand, had a quick conversation.
Oh, wasn't nice that? Guy. Yeah, he didn't have to do that. I can tell you, David Letterman.
He really didn't.
David Letterman would not have done that. And I'm glad that now I could say it's okay. I'm free of having any responsibility.
Right.
He's a jerk. And I don't know why people love him so much. Forget that. I don't want to say that because I'm.
Yeah, you know enough.
I don't want to put.
You know
I don't want to put enough negative.
People in show business. They all have their neuroses.
I don't want to put negativity out in the world either, Dark Mark. You know what? I'm regretting that I said it. What I'd like to say is that I hope that he has this opportunity to try to be a better person.
What you said is Jay Leno is a nicer person. That's all you need to say.
Yeah, that's
the positive
right.
is Jay Leno.
But
is
but here I put it out here into the world.
Now that's okay.
Well, I feel bad.
Now I would imagine I would say probably people under 30, a lot of them know you from Final Destination.
Oh yeah, that's a good film. Boy, those guys who made that are awfully talented. That was a good time. Did you say Hannah likes that movie?
Hannah loves that movie. Oh. I'm just seeing if she has any questions about it, but she loves that movie. She loves them all. I honestly should have watched it today. I haven't seen any of them, but I hear that your death comes as a real shock.
It will come as a shock to you because I don't die.
Oh, you don't die?
No.
I live.
You will be shocked. I just saved you the shock of going, he's still there.
No, stop.
No,
you would have been in Final Destination 2, 3, 4, 5.
Well, I would have been, but there was an interesting dilemma. You know, I think the main actor, Final Destination, had some personal issues. He was a nice guy, but had some personal issues, which, I think kind of moved him out of Final Destination 2, and that moved the whole storyline away from us.
Right.
As far as I can ascertain. Although he's the movie star in the Fan or the Fanatic, the John Travolta movie, Devon Sawa. Mm-hmm. Okay. I haven't seen it, but I always thought he was a great actor, so I'd like to revisit it.
Yeah. He is a good actor. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Since we're going to put this on a positive note in the next 10 minutes, and then I'll let you go because we're almost at an hour now. But like I say, this is fascinating.
Well, we can do a part two. We're only
I'd love to do a part two. We'll do Hannah. Yeah, I would love to have, I would love to, when everybody can be together in one room, I would love to have you come in the studio with us.
Sure.
Yeah. And, but I have to get this out before I get anything out. Is it true that you originally were supposed to have Daniel Stern's part in Home Alone?
Well, interesting. You know, that was a secret of sorts, but now it's out because they put it in Movies We Love. So in that show, if people see that, Movies We Love on Netflix, they don't really tell the exact story. And I didn't understand why they didn't just tell the exact story. The exact story is this. They never wanted me to be in Home Alone. They wanted Daniel Stern. Pesci knew him from another movie, and
right.
Chris Columbus was in on it. So that's who they wanted, and John Hughes, and that's who they wanted. And he, in the story, you hear Daniel Stern say he balked at the money because they added 2 weeks to the schedule but didn't want to pay more. Mm-hmm. So the studio, you know, in an effort to teach everyone a lesson, made Chris Columbus hire me, okay? So they hired me. They insinuate that, I don't know why they do, but they insinuate that they didn't hire me, that I was just, I went to meet or something. But they hired me with the intent that they were gonna fire me 2 days later. Maybe that's what nobody wants to admit, and that's the dirty secret of Hollywood. I was never gonna be in Home Alone. It was always gonna be Daniel Stern, but they had to get me there and then say that there was no chemistry. And then they could fire me. When Chris Columbus brought me into the office to say there was no chemistry, I said, Chris, I'm so confused. The characters have one scene together in the entire movie. Right. And the rest of the movie, the kid's hitting us in the face with bricks.
Right.
Who cares? Like, I don't really know who cares about the chemistry. But, right. You know, I got a lot of good inside information because people can read about it in the book. In the strangest way that God puts things in front of you, I took a girl out once, and she had all the inside scoop because she was dating a business affairs guy. So I learned everything that went on. Because up to that point, I thought they just fired me because I was rotten. But that wasn't the case. It was never the case. But here's what I'd like to say about it, Dark Mark. With great respect that I have for Daniel Stern, so
right.
Let's not misjudge this.
Tremendous actor. He's great.
Tremendous actor. But this is the bottom line. I dodged a bullet because I never had to be the movie star. Daniel Stern did Home Alone. Great. Did Home Alone 2. Great. $1 million paycheck.
Yeah.
Great. Did the thing with Billy Crystal 1 and 2. Great. That's great. That's all great. But then he was a movie star. And right about the time that he couldn't take any part that wasn't a movie star part, I started taking any part I wanted to take, and was a movie star to begin with, and am still a movie star to this day. But in between, I've done those other 250 things you talked about.
Right.
So the blessing for me is I wasn't in Home Alone. I never had to be the guy in Home Alone, because they would not have put the guy in Home Alone in Final Destination. They wouldn't have put him in The Late Shift. They wouldn't have put him in any of the 50 great dramatic roles that I've had. They would never have considered Daniel Stern for. Joe Pesci's a different animal because,
right.
You know, he had established that great character. And
right.
And Joe Pesci's, he's a great actor. But,
right.
You know, after Home Alone, they were both kind of screwed.
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying?
No, I know exactly. So they both got typecast and you never did.
And I never did. So, I mean, you know, if you're counting numbers, I'm sure Mr. Stern's numbers aren't what my numbers are. And it's, you know, is he richer than me? Yeah, probably, but who cares? I love what I do.
And this is a great perspective, what you have now, but did you have that perspective then?
I got it shortly after I got the real story, when I realized it wasn't about me. So immediately I was humiliated by it. And then 2 years later, I wasn't humiliated by it. But I'll tell you this, I was Home Alone because I took all the money that they had to pay me, and they had to pay me all of it. And they tried not to. That's what was driving the...
Wow.
That's what was
so
trying to...
So you got paid for Home Alone and you
yeah.
didn't...
And
you
I didn't do work. It. Yeah, so they had to pay me and Daniel Stern. And they made some stupid rule, because Hollywood is like that I wasn't allowed to work at the same time frame that the movie was going. So it was like 8 weeks I didn't work. And the very next day, I got the very next job I went in for. Right. So the joke was not on me. I wish it
wasn't that you and Pesci butted heads as much as you were always the second choice and they're trying to.
I was never going to be in Home Alone. This is a thing to remember, Dark Mark, and all your listeners, that there is a perception of reality and there's reality. God's destiny for you is not decided by Joe Pesci and Chris Columbus. God's destiny for me is only decided by me and my contract with my creator. So I was never going to be in Home Alone. And right. It was just an illusion that I was going to be in Home Alone. And that's true of so many things in life, that we put so much stock in this idea we have of what could be, what will be, what money will I make, what will that relationship be like? And we create these false realities. But this is what I'm trying to teach actors in my little mini book here. I'm trying to teach them that four strangers in a room don't change their life. So
right.
Don't worry about it so much. You know, we have to meet our destiny head on. We have to be right. Partners in the plan.
Even though you must be a great auditioner, though.
I'm a pretty good auditioner, yeah. You know, and it's nice now after so many years, I don't have to audition so much. I get a lot of parts offered to me. But I'll tell you, I still like going in the room and gluing on mustaches and coloring my hair and wearing fat suits or wearing Spanx. I like confusing them because nobody really knows who I am. If they watch this, they'd be like, oh, he's just a big goony guy, you know, who probably is still mad at.
You're a regular guy.
I am a regular guy.
You're a Pennsylvania. You're a blue-collar guy.
Yeah, I'm a blue-collar guy. Dwayne Whitaker, my buddy, always said that would be the name of his biography, the blue-collar actor, you know. Right. If you don't, we always joke, you know, this is the actors that crack me up. They're like, Mark, when I was doing Henry IV, no, it was Henry V. And I was doing, no, it was Henry IV, pardon me. It was Henry IV. I did them both in rep. And I was doing Henry IV. And you're like, oh, shut up. Like, all I ever wanted to be was a guy on TV. It's all I ever wanted to be.
Right.
I didn't have any big ideas about my talent. I just wanted to be, I wanted to serve God with the gift that he gave me.
Yeah. Now, you've been a mainstay in the horror movies for like the last 10, 15 years. How did you meet Don Coscarelli from Phantasm fame?
Don.
You've
so
been in
great.
A bunch of movies with him.
I know. I love that guy. So this is, again, the genius of how things work out. I was an extra in 1985, and I was walking down a street on a TV show called The Master, and we were out like in Calabasas. And I was walking, they're like, you and you, go walk over there. So I'm walking with the other guy, and I say to the other guy, well, what do you want to be? And the other guy says, I'm going to be a stuntman. And he says, what do you want to be? And I say, I'm going to be an actor. And I'm sure we're both like, right. But that guy ended up giving me a ride home that day because my wife had dropped me off.
Right.
He drove me back to Hollywood. Well, that guy was Bob Ivy. And Bob Ivy is the greatest fan of Phantasm in the world.
Right.
And then he ended up, he flips the hearse. Is it part three where they pipe ramped a hearse?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's Bob Ivy. And then Bob Ivy in four is the state trooper in the burnt face. And then in Bubba Hotep, he's Bubba Hotep. Bob Ivy is Bubba.
Right.
He's the mummy. And he knew what he told me. He was like, you're going to be mad about this, but I'm going to play the mummy. And I was like, you know, but Bob was so skinny and I wasn't so skinny.
Right.
Anyway, Bob Ivy was my ticket in. And then Don Coscarelli is, again, one of the nicest human beings in Hollywood. She's so nice and so talented.
So creative.
Yeah. And you know, making his movies is such a, you know, you'll do any, it's just like Rob Zombie. You'll do anything for him. You want to please him. He came to me about, did you get to see John Dies in the End? Did you ever see that one?
Oh, yeah, I love that one.
Yeah, so, you know, he came to me and he said, I've got this part for you, and it's a big part. You know, you've got to – it's not a one-day thing. Right. And I was like, great. He said, but you're going to have to wear a mask. And I was like, wear a mask sometimes? He said, no, all the time. And I went, okay. And he felt terrible about it. Like, I said at one point, I didn't know if they were – like, Paul Giamatti wasn't signed yet. I said, well, I could play another part, and that would be our joke. Right. But thank God Paul came to do the part because he's terrific. But so I play that Mr. Lodgman, and I have that, you know. And I remember at one of the events, Don was apologizing to me on stage. I said, Don, look, Roddy McDowall was, you know, he played an ape in four movies and a TV series, but you always knew it was him because you heard his voice. And then I realized, wait, I totally made up a voice. So there's no way to know that it's me in that movie. Because Mr. Lodgman has a weird voice and talks in a weird way.
Yeah, I heard that Fantastic Five, you like filmed like 5 years before it came out.
Or more, honestly. Really? May have been 10 years. I don't...
Wow.
We filmed it a long time ago.
Yeah.
I wanted to be Dark Mark. I wanted to be the best sphere death. Like, because they're always like...
Yeah.
I was like... You know, tell me where you want this blood, Don. You know, I was like writing my name on the Dan was here. Hardest part about that was whatever that weird language was that I had to speak.
Oh, yeah. It was like some weird Dutch sort of Amish. I don't know what it was.
It was, yeah, he's like from, I think, Ukrainian. It was Ukrainian. The problem was I was working, and then I had to work all the day before, and then I had to drive up to where we shot, which was, you know, in San Bernardino, and then work and then drive back again. So it was a lot of driving. And I may not have had the time to learn. And we didn't have, that was so long ago, honestly, you couldn't just put it in your phone and listen to it in your car. That's how long ago it was. There was no Bluetooth.
Right. And then how did you meet Rob Zombie? How did he get aware of you?
I had two meetings with Rob Zombie. The first one, inauspicious, we were at a place called Kit Craft. Do you ever go there in North Hollywood where they used to have models like Jeff Yeager would sculpt a mummy and you would go there and buy it or whatever? And one day we're in there. I'm there with my buddy Johnny Gilbert, who's a huge Creature from the Black Lagoon collector. And Johnny, you know, this guy comes in and Johnny's like, you know, I could see he's like totally, he's like, Mr. Zombie. What a pleasure it is to. I said, what did you call this guy? He said, this is Rob Zombie. Don't you know Rob Zombie? And well, you know, I listen to show tunes. No, I didn't know Rob Zombie.
Yeah.
If this is the virus, aren't you glad you're over there? I'm just dry. So I met him then, and then we were at, I was at a screening of Elvira's Hidden Hills, the movie.
Right.
Excuse me. And he and Sherry were there. And I went over and introduced myself. And he said, oh, you know, Sherry said I should just come say hi to you. And that's where we met. And then I think it was just a little while later was when they were doing I'm so sorry.
Well, that's okay.
The Devil's Rejects.
Right.
And then he put me in that.
And you've been a regular ever since. You were in Halloween and Halloween 2 as different characters.
I have. I'm so sorry.
I'm going to let you go because I could see that you're...
I've got... Hey, let's do part two. Please, part two.
I definitely want to do part two, but I wanted to, before you go, tell us about your charity, Channel of Peace, and you're making a film, Hail Mary.
Yes, thank you. So... We're making, this is so interesting. If there's a doctor watching, he's probably like, that's it. He's got it. I invite people to go to achannelofpeace.org or follow us on Facebook, A Channel of Peace. That's based on the great prayer of St. Francis. Make me a channel of your peace. Our next movie we're going to make is called The Hail Mary. And I hope I get to come back again because it's 2 years today since we released Getting Grace. And I invite people to see Getting Grace, film
I saw that today, and I really wanted you wrote, directed, starred in it.
Co-wrote it with Jeff Lewis. Yeah, it's really sweet, and it's gotten so many lovely reviews and
awards.
It's changed people's lives. People tell me that it gave them closure and hope and solace. Because it's about a teenage girl who's dying, and she goes into a funeral home to find out what's going to happen after she dies. But right. She ends up teaching the funeral director how to celebrate his life.
Yeah, that's what I saw the plot line. I was like, wow, this looks really cool.
It's really
interesting premise. Yeah.
Thank you, Dark Mark. It's really sweet. It's on Amazon. It's on Hulu. You could watch it for free on Hulu, Apple, iTunes, whatever. It's everywhere. Sure. And it's you won't be disappointed, I can tell you. You won't be disappointed. Yeah. And the next movie, The Hail Mary, is about a funny nun with a great sense of humor and a sense of purpose who finds this guy who needs redemption. So she cons him into creating a football team for her all-boys Catholic school.
Oh, that's great. Very sweet.
People can go to achannelofpeace.org or they can go to thehailmaryfilm.com. To learn more. But what we're doing with the Channel of Peace is the idea is we're going to make faith-filled family entertainment, which is why I didn't want to hear the F word earlier when I was doing Dennis Hopper. And we're doing it as a not-for-profit. So if we are successful, we make money, we'll put it into the next movie. And the next movie is a documentary called The Lost Art of Forgiving. So I got a lot of good stuff in my future.
That's great.
And I that sounded wrong. There's a lot of good stuff in the future. Howard. And I'm lucky that I'll be part of it, I hope.
Well, I'm lucky that I'm not sure how this happened, but I got you on my show because I'm a big fan of yours, big admirer. There's so much more to talk about, but
let's talk for
over an hour. So I'm starting to get,
you're starting to get dizzy. You're starting to get dry too.
I'm starting to get a little froggy throat too.
What's funny is we're all afraid that we're getting sick, but the truth is we're in our house and the heat's on. You know.
No, we're not getting sick. It's just we've been talking for an hour. You gotta rest your vocals here and there. You know.
I'm a professional voiceover actor now.
I know you are. You're a delightful man, and you're putting out inspiration, and this is right when we need it, and I really appreciate that.
All right. God bless you, Dark Mark, and don't be so dark. Let a little of the light in.
Hey, you have a good balance of the dark and the light. You got the horror movies, and you got the faith-based entertainment. You got it all covered.
Thank you. I'm trying my best.
One of the best actors in the world, Daniel Robot. Go ahead. You had one more thing to say?
No, I just wanted to say thank you, everybody, for listening.
Yes, and everybody have a wonderfully creepy week. It's that's the way I sign off all the time.
Oh, it is?
And this week it's very appropriate. Thank you, Daniel.
Hold on. If we're going to have a wonderfully creepy week, we should do it with the creature.
There you go. Wow, look at that.
Bum, bum, bum.
Everybody have a wonderfully creepy week. Bye.